Psalm 142 is an intense plea. The psalmist is blocked. You probably know the feeling. He can't go forward. There's no going back because he's being pursued, as we find out in verse 6. And there's no help to right and there's no help to left. There's no way out of this situation he's in. Help has to come from above. So, and note, at last, the lack of any plea that enemies be punished. So we start verse 1 of 142. With a loud cry I make my urgent plea to Yahweh. With a loud cry I plead with Yahweh. I pour out my anguish before him, proclaiming the trouble I am in. And significant or not, I'm not sure, but it is a fact. The word in verse 2, which we translate here as proclaim, when it's used throughout the Psalms and in other places, it's you expect to say, we proclaim the wonders of Yahweh. That's the almost the phrase. Here, it's proclaiming the trouble I'm in. So he's in a pretty dark place. He's experiencing the absence of God, the absence of help, and he's cornered. My spirit is faint, he says, but you know my way. The you in the Hebrew is emphatic. I've done that with you before, I think, haven't I? The verb itself is quite sufficient. It has the ending of the verb indicates that it's second person, so you don't need a pronoun. But when you do have the pronoun as well as the verbal suffix which indicates a second person, then obviously there's an emphasis on it. So you, nobody else seems to, but you know my way. And as Christians we might think, pretty obvious point, eh? Jesus says, I am the way. So my way is the way of Jesus now for us. Back to the psalm. In the path where I walk, they've hidden a trap for me. Look on my right hand and see, there's no one who takes notice of me. No refuge remains for me. No one cares for me. There. Well, it's no doubt true, and it can be true for any of us, can't it? Even those nearest to us sometimes can't help us. So no one's taking any care for him. Like Jesus on the cross, I suggest the psalmist is exhausted. But he's still crying out to God. God hears the cry of the poor. So he still knows where to go, and he's still urgently crying. Verse 5, well, there it is. Urgently I cry to you, Yahweh, and I say, you are my refuge, my portion, that part that I inherit and belongs to me because you've promised it. You're my portion in the land of the living. Ezekiel 44, I am their inheritance, says God. They've just lost the Holy Land and they're in exile with Ezekiel. He says, it's okay, God's saying, I'm your inheritance. Not the land, but me. I am their inheritance. You shall give them no holding in Israel. I am their holding. And maybe think of Luke 10, where that story of Martha and Mary, which has nothing to do with the contemplative and the active life. That's not what it's about. As though the contemplative life is better than the active life. It clearly isn't. And look at Jesus' 3 years of public ministry. Pretty active, I would have thought. So, no, there's not better and worse here. The best thing to do is God's will. So that needs to be discerned. And if God's will is that you take a vow of celibacy and go off into a hermitage for the rest of your life, that's clearly the best thing for you to do. If God's will is that you marry and have 8 kids, then that's clearly the best thing you can do. You know, so it's whatever it is. Yeah. And God hasn't got a plan, it's all fixed, but it's the constant inspiration for us to take that next step of love. Well, in this case, it's about focus, isn't it, of Mary and Martha? Because what Jesus says to Martha is, you're distracted over many things. Nothing wrong with what she's doing. In fact, he was quite keen to get the scones and tea and whatever else was coming out from Martha. But she was upset and she was distracted and she was doing something good, but grumpily. And I'm sure that's hopeless. If you're... Well, I'll tell you a little secret, but don't tell anyone else. I'm the mother upstairs. I do all the cleaning up, I can tell you, and I do quite a bit of it. Tidying up, emptying the thing, washing up, cleaning the sink. Just that's what I do. That's my relaxation, really. And the others know I do it, so they quite happily leave it for me. And there's no doubt about that either. But, like, do you know what I mean? If I was doing it, I'm not putting myself up, you know that, I mean, but if I was doing it and thinking, why don't they take their turn, or why am I always the one doing it? Can you see how crazy that would be? Better not to do it. No one's asking me to do it. I'm doing it, and they're happily doing other things. So you either do it happily or you don't do it, but you don't do it and grumble. So Martha's out there, and Mary's sitting there listening to Jesus, and she's saying, why don't you send her in, blah, 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 blah. And Jesus is saying, look, leave her alone. Mary has chosen the better part, will not be taken away from her. Surely the point of the gospel is that whether you're in the kitchen working or in the lounge room sitting at prayer, you're with the Lord, you're with Jesus, and that's the thing to be with. If you're with him, then do it happily, either. Well, it doesn't matter, no. Nothing's better than anything else. But the better part, Martha, which Martha was losing, sadly, in her grumpiness, and why does Mary leave me to do all the work? But what I just said to you then, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to give you advice because you know it better than I do, but I'm sure that's a really basic principle that I find in all my ministry it happens. You know, somebody who's poor, you know, rings up, Vincent, a poor person, say, and I get the phone, get the phone, okay. Well, now, it's a tricky business, all that, because sometimes people are having you on, sometimes they're not fair dinkum, sometimes they're really poor, you know, and you've got to kind of make a bit of a judgment, though you don't make it too firm. Well, I'm learning, I hope, that it's my problem if I go to a lot of trouble and go and look after someone who doesn't really need it. That's what I've chosen to do, and it's my problem. Isn't it better for me to say, and I sometimes do say, look, I'm sorry I can't help you that way, or I won't be helping you that way. Now, I have to live with that. I've chosen not to help in that way for advice or whatever reason. But you can see, can't you, that it's better for me to live with my either lack of generosity or judgmentalism or whatever I'm doing or whatever it is that makes me say I won't be helping you in that way. Or is that courage to do the truth? Could be that too. It's better for me to live with that than to say, oh, you know, and go and do it, and then kind of, because then they can handle my no, but they can't handle my yes that's grumpy. And why what right have I got to do something for someone without graciousness? You do follow me, don't you? It's just so, because then I've got to live with what I do and don't blame them for what I'm doing. And that's good for me to have to do that. But not easy, I have to tell you. So verse 6. Give heed to my cry, for I am brought very low. Save me from my persecutors, for they're too strong for me. Bring me out of prison. The prison of the surrounding corruption, or whatever it might be. The prison of not being loved. Prison of a child abandoning you, or all the prisons we can be in, or people saying things about you that are not true and yet can't really defend yourself, all that. So that I may give thanks to your name, the righteous will gather round me when you accord to me your favour. So someone will turn up and sit down with me and help me. It's not a bad psalm, really. You might like to take a note of it. Psalm 140.